The early portion of 2019 has brought more than its share of severe weather events, and that includes some historic flooding. In southeast Michigan, Wayne County was hit hard enough for Governor Whitmer to declare a state of emergency. Areas along Lake St. Clair and western Lake Erie also have been hit by flooding in recent weeks. The Missouri River has absolutely devastated some communities along its banks. What connection might these events and such events in the future have to do with climate change? This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair, welcoming you to Issues of the Environment. Our guest today has been looking at that connection. Andrew Groenewald is an associate professor in the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, David.
So let me ask you this right off the bat. Do you think the first half of 2019 should be considered a wake-up call?
Absolutely. The events that we've been witnessing, not just across the Great Lakes, but across the upper Midwest with persistent flooding, extreme precipitation events, and particularly for the Great Lakes, extreme water level conditions, really warrant of close examination of what's been happening across the system and an even closer investigation of what we might need to do in the future to better adapt to these types of conditions.
Well, isn't there a strong argument to be made that collectively, politically, and financially, the alarm bell should have been ringing long ago?
I suppose there could be, but there's always a good time to have a call for this type of pause and retrospection, and this happens to be one of those as well.
So let's talk a little bit about the science. Do the Great Lakes and the climate that it helps produce make us more vulnerable or susceptible to flooding?
That's a great question. Part of what makes the Great Lakes region susceptible to flooding has to do with its latitude and its proximity to the jet stream and continental processes. So the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes right now are experiencing a lot of moisture due to their location with the jet stream, but also due to the fact that as air temperatures increase, they are carrying more moisture.
We had a polar vortex again this past winter season, and it was more than cold, to say the least. But are those kinds of things going to become more frequent, and is that going to impact our ability to manage our freshwater supply in this region?
David, the science on Arctic polar vortex deformations is not clear. They do happen periodically, and there's evidence, in fact, that as the climate changes across the planet, that, in fact, these Arctic polar vortex deformations are becoming even more focused and less widespread. But again, the science on that isn't particularly clear. I would argue that aside from Arctic polar vortex deformations, the biggest things that make water supply planning difficult for the Great Lakes region are fundamental changes in precipitation and then corresponding changes in evaporation. Those two forces and how they counteract or interact make it a real challenge to forecast water supplies on the Great Lakes at monthly and annual timescales.
We see what you're talking about is variability. We see great variabilities. It wasn't that long ago where we had such low lake levels in the Great Lakes and in some of our inland lakes that people couldn't even reach their docks out to the water. And now we're talking about record water levels in the Great Lakes and elsewhere throughout the region. So how do we make any kind of determination on how to adapt to those conditions when it is so variable?
Well, that is one of the challenges that we face. The variability that we've seen over the past 20 years in the Great Lakes, and in particular when we look at Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, and Lake Huron, is sort of punctuated, as you mentioned, by this low period from the late 1990s until about 2013. That was an unprecedented period of persistent below-average water levels for those lakes. And then that period ended with an unprecedented rise in water levels over a 2 to 3 year period. And now here we are talking about record water levels again on the Great Lakes.
So, historically speaking, has that always happened?
The period that I just described, where we have about 15 years of persistent below average water levels, there's not a comparable period in the historical water level record where you have that long a period of persistent below average water levels. And then if you look at when water levels tend to, let's say, recover from a low period, the only other period in the historical record where we have a fluctuation between lows and highs like this one is if you look at the period from the mid-1960s to the mid-1980s. So a water level rise that took place over the course of 20 years. The one that we're talking about has taken place over the course of about 6 to 7 years.
That is a major difference. You're listening to Issues of the Environment, and it continues on 89.1 WEMU. We're talking about climate change connections to more severe weather events and flooding with Andrew Groenewald. Andrew is an associate professor in the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan and a hydrologist by trade, and therefore that is the study of water, and that is perfect for today's conversation. The words climate change can be very divisive. There are people who simply won't buy in because they hear those words. There are others who are so focused on it that perhaps other matters fall to the wayside and aren't taken into consideration. How can we characterize the issues that are stemming from a warming planet in a way that is something that brings us together rather than divides us?
Great question, David. When we think about this, and when I and my colleagues talk about this, there are a lot of different narratives surrounding this topic. And my view is that they all take a different shape and form, but in a way, they're really talking about the same thing. Let me give you two examples. One example is a quote in the newspaper recently by Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York, who recently declared a state of emergency mm-hmm. for portions of New York along Lake Ontario shoreline. And here's what Governor Cuomo said. He said he has seen enough evidence about changes in the magnitude and frequency of hurricanes, about the magnitude and frequency of flooding in his state, to change the way he makes decisions. Now, from my perspective, that is not that much different than saying we ought to make preparations and anticipate a changing climate. A second anecdote mm-hmm. is when you see folks in the Lake Ontario region and other regions talking about how they have never seen events like this before in their lifetime, and that their parents didn't see anything like this before in their lifetime.
Which in the span of time is a very short period of time.
Which in the span of time, it can be decades, and maybe in the big picture, it can be a short period
right.
of time. But I guess the point would be that those different narratives are not that far apart.
One of the ways that we all connect is when we are directly impacted. So let's explore some of that. We already have an overtaxed, old, and in many cases decrepit water infrastructure. What will those changes do to our water and sewer systems without significant improvements?
Well, the challenge is a lot of water, stormwater, and even wastewater infrastructure is designed according to hydrologic conditions in the past. So looking at the
And population levels.
And population levels in terms of demand and use of the system. If those things change dramatically, that would suggest that the infrastructure is not going to be designed adequately and there needs to be an adaptation to that.
So the agricultural industry, we see more flooding. It changes the way that we can produce. It changes and impacts us in a myriad of ways. Are the agricultural seasons going to change in Michigan in the immediate and not so distant future?
That's a great question. There are sort of two parts of the answer to that. One has to do with changes in temperature and a potential extension of the agricultural season and its duration. The other one has to do with the timing and the magnitude of precipitation in the region. This increase in wintertime precipitation is leading to increased stream flow earlier in the season, and that's something on which the entire agricultural community depends.
So there would have to be a shift in the future to adapt to that.
Potentially, yes.
This is 89.1 WEMU, and our Issues of the Environment conversation continues with U of M School for Environment and Sustainability Associate Professor Andrew Groenewald. Solutions, it appears, are dependent on our ability to prepare and adapt. So in your estimation, what do those preparations look like?
Well, they have to do with changes in how we interact with the shoreline of the Great Lakes. So a lot of our research is focused on how these changes in the climate system and changes in precipitation evaporation lead to changes in coastal water levels. And if we want to continue interacting with that coastline, we need to change how close we live to it and how we build and construct infrastructure along that coastline.
That might be a tough conversation to have with folks who already have some rather expensive property along those shores.
It's a very hard conversation to have.
But it is one, in your estimation, that needs to take place. And if we don't have it, then Mother Nature is going to have it for us.
I would agree.
Where will your research and studies take you next, and how might we apply that to the future we're talking about?
So one of the big questions that we're facing in our research has to do with how do we develop better long-term forecasting systems? One of the most common questions, or two of the most common questions we face are, what are hydrologic conditions going to be like next season or the season after that? And then the second most common question is, what are hydrologic conditions going to be like decades from now? So a big focal point of research is to develop systems that we can forecast hydrologic conditions across those timescales. That's a challenge.
if we could develop that talent, how would that change our ability to better adapt?
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a good answer to that. It sort of requires a study for which we don't have any evidence in terms of if we had a perfect forecast, how would we have done things differently? And I guess in many ways, there is evidence all around us of where there have been accurate forecasts and folks have made good decisions. Right now, the punctuation is on cases in which a forecast might have either been off or not available. Folks made a decision and it didn't work out well.
I think one of the fears that I have in having all of these conversations is sometimes it sounds dire, but through all of our conversation today, I hear a lot of reason for optimism as well.
Well, there is a reason for optimism. The Great Lakes community and the Upper Midwest have adapted to a lot of changes. And the Great Lakes in particular have seen water levels, particularly on Lake Michigan and Lake Huron, fluctuate over a range of 5 to 6 feet over the period of decades. We've figured out solutions in the past, and there's a good chance we can figure it out for the future.
Well, you get back to work, and we'll have you back in when we have more direction towards those solutions.
Sounds good.
That is Andrew Groenewald, Associate Professor in the School for Environment and Sustainability at the University of Michigan. For more information on today's topic, visit our website at WEMU.org. Issues of the Environment is a weekly feature produced in partnership with the Office of the Washtenaw County Water Resources Commissioner. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.